You're listening to Last Word Radio, where you get the last word.
Hello and welcome into the Coast to Coast Basketball Podcast. I'm your host, Austin Craycraft, and I'm joined by my co-host, who I really haven't talked to in a really long time, in Dante Guarneri. Dante, since I last saw you, might have still been in school, so how's summer treating you?
It's been pretty good. I think the last time we spoke, actually, I was just getting back from vacation, and then
that sounds about right.
We were rolling right into the finals, but that one breezed by so quickly that I guess it didn't really even matter. And it's what we all expected, right? Golden State's the champion.
It certainly is. And we do have a third person on this show. His name is Thomas Titley. If you're an avid listener to the show, you've heard him before. He's our, I guess you could call him our Coast to Coast draft expert.
Yes.
I don't know about expert. We'll say connoisseur.
Okay.
Connoisseur ranks higher. I don't know.
Thomas, are you at, do they have summer right now in Canada, or is it different?
Yeah. We're on summer vacation here too,
And it's treating you well.
Yeah, it's hot.
Yeah, that's typically how it goes. But speaking of hot, the NBA rumor mill is certainly heating up. And we tried to separate rumor mill and NBA draft, but then we figured out, hey, we can't really, because they're really going hand in hand with the draft. Oh, about 48 hours away from now. So I think we'll start with the draft. Anything we don't touch there, we will jump into after the draft. Thomas, we coined you with the job of putting together a mock draft, the first 14 picks, and then we will either scold you or praise you based on how we think your picks go. So with the first pick, the Philadelphia 76ers are on the clock.
To me, it's a pretty obvious one.
Yeah, we don't have to talk about this long.
Yeah, it's Markelle Fultz. When you look at all the players, I personally think he's head and shoulders above everyone. Like, he can do everything. So it's got to be Markelle Fultz for Philadelphia. If it's not, I'll be completely shocked. I think everyone will.
It's pretty much already written in stone, it sounds like. I agree. I think the Boston trade is still kind of intriguing to me, like why they did it. They must have just thought Fultz is just amongst that tier, but I'm with you where I think he's going to be an elite level prospect, and I think he has all the tools to become a superstar.
I don't think there's anything to disagree about here.
All right, Lakers, this might be a pretty simple choice as well.
Well, so everyone's saying it's going to be Lonzo Ball, but I've read some reports that the Lakers weren't that impressed with his workouts. I'm still going to take Ball because I don't think they'll be able to resist the media outcry. They almost have to at this point. So I think it's going to be Lonzo Ball. If it's not, though, I think it'll be Josh Jackson.
That's fair. I think for me, it's either Lonzo, and there was a report that the LA Times beat writer for the Lakers, I don't remember her name, but she just put out a tweet fairly recently saying that the Lakers are willing to give up that number two pick if the third team is involved. So I think that kind of shows you that they said that that they're not willing to give up Brandon Ingram, which means they just think Ingram's better than Ball when you really think about it.
Which I think is completely true, right? At least, from what we've seen and what we know of Brandon Ingram, he's already been able to prove himself at least to some extent in the NBA, and he seems to me to have even a higher ceiling than Ball.
I definitely agree with that. I personally believe that Ingram has a higher ceiling than pretty much everyone but Fultz in this draft, and it's not that close. You could talk about his numbers last year, but he played on the Lakers on a really bad young Lakers team.
Wait. So what? Everyone's been proclaiming this is the best draft since 07 with Durant, 03 since LeBron, 98 even. So you're saying that last year, which is a pretty notoriously bad draft, their number two pick is better than this year's? You think the strength of this draft is just the overall number of stars, not the
quantity and quality is different. I think the strength of this draft is definitely the point guards. And the top 10 are all going to be very, very good players. Last year, Simmons and Ingram have the potential to be better than everyone in this draft.
So would you take Ben Simmons or Markelle Fultz?
The problem is you haven't seen either of them play in the NBA.
Exactly.
That's so, the fun of it, I guess.
Yeah.
Now we get to see them play together, I guess.
Exactly. So it'll be a coin flip for me. But again, this draft, it's talented, but more in its depth of talent and not the top quality.
That's fair. I think you two are certainly higher on Ingram than most are, or at least in reference to Ball. Maybe you guys, I have to believe that you like, you think someone else has a higher ceiling below Ball that we haven't listed yet, correct?
I think there's a couple of players that have that could potentially have a higher ceiling than Ball. It's just whether or not they reach their potential. I think there's a lot of question marks with Lonzo Ball's game. His turnover percentage in the pick and roll was abysmal, which is, the pick and roll is a staple of NBA offenses. So if he can't do that, he will struggle. And that to me is a huge question mark.
It certainly is. Maybe one of those higher upside guys will go to the Boston Celtics at the number 3 pick following their trade with Philly.
So this one, you've seen a lot of different ones. I think it's going to be Josh Jackson, but I've also seen Jason Tatum in some places. I just think Jackson's upside defensively trumps Tatum's more polished offensive game.
Okay, so this is where I think we're gonna start going in different directions. I, for one, I just don't think that this pick is going to go to Boston. And even if it does, I feel as though Jason Tatum makes a lot of sense for them, especially considering he has room to grow defensively. I think that's a big part for me. Under Brad Stevens, I think that he gets that team defense that he probably didn't really get at Duke. And I also think there is some overlap in Josh Jackson's skill sets with the free agents that they're targeting, or even players that they're targeting.
And Jaylen Brown.
That's a good point too. I think, you know, you look at Gordon Hayward, you look at, you know, even Jimmy Butler, who this pick could, you know, potentially turn into. That's a whole other story. I could kind of see some similarities between those guys and Jackson.
For me, I spent two and a half hours last night writing and watching about Tatum, so I'm kind of over the moon on him right now. He might even be like number 2 on my big board. Oh. So I also side with you, Dante. And what we saw the Celtics struggle with in the playoffs was their offense. When Isaiah Thomas wasn't playing super well, they couldn't get buckets. So if you bring in Gordon Hayward and Jason Tatum, it solves a lot of problems. And I think Tatum is more ready now, and it seems like the Celtics are still trying to find that middle ground of playing now versus looking to win after LeBron is gone. But so number 4 then, Thomas, who do the Suns take?
It's going to be Tatum at number 4. He is such a polished offensive player for a guy that size. I remember watching him at Duke, and he can shoot, he can take people off the dribble, he can even post people up. He's an extremely talented player. The only worry is his foot speed vertically on defense. He gets beat a little too much for my liking, especially when he was playing guys
horizontally,
who...
correct?
Pardon?
Foot speed horizontally?
Horizontally, vertically. I meant horizontally. He gets beat a little too often on the perimeter, but that could probably be fixed with some changes in his stance. So I think Orlando would love to have him, especially since he didn't shoot the lights out of the ball, especially in his last couple months at Duke, or was it his first couple months? There was a stretch where he really struggled from 3, which really lowered his percentages quite a bit. But he has terrific form, and he is knocked down from 3, and I think Orlando needs some shooting.
You mean Phoenix, correct? Phoenix. Cause they have, yeah, you're good. I think... whoever Phoenix gets, I think they're in a good spot because I like the fit of Booker and Tatum or Booker and Jackson. So I think they can't really go wrong. They just take the best player available and figure out the rest later. And both those players went to the requisite big schools that Phoenix seems to have to have in either Kentucky, Duke, or Kansas.
You prefer Jackson here if you're Phoenix, right? I think, you know, I
higher upside, yeah.
And more established defensively, I guess. I think that's probably a big concern, yeah. being next to Booker. But it is still such a guard heavy team in general. You know, I guess they, no matter what, they really do have to go forward. I do like the fake trades being thrown around with them involved, kind of being the third player in a trade where they do have a lot of assets that kind of don't match up necessarily to what they're going to look for in the future or try to build around. So I still think, again, another chance for a possible trade, but I don't think it'll impact here. And I'm agreeing they'll take whoever, whichever forward is available.
Right. And I think I like the Suns too in that trade regard. And a guy like Bledsoe is movable for a team, and they could get a player like Kevin Love back. I think you have to keep Marquese Chriss though in any trade you get. I'm pretty high on him, and I think he's going to be a really, really solid player for them. So number five, we have the Sacramento Kings, who they need a little bit of everything, right? So, Thomas, who do you think should go to the Kings?
Sacramento needs a lot, but this is a point guard driven league. So I think they're going to take De'Aaron Fox. As you know, I've been up and down on him all year. I can't decide if I like him or not. The thing with him is everyone complains about his shooting, but his mechanics are sound, and from all accounts, he was a good three-point shooter in high school. It's just he couldn't put it together in college.
I saw a video of him, and he was just knocking down everything. It was very impressive to watch.
Yeah, but, I mean, then again, there's a big difference between somebody shooting in a gym by themselves and actually in-game. So I think they'll take Fox. He's a dynamic playmaker, as he's shown when he played against other elite point guards when he torched Lonzo Ball. He can get to the rim whenever. And what I actually like about him is his touch in the mid-range. He's got a very nice floater game, which I think when you're moving at that speed, that's something that John Wall took a little while to get, was that little touch. It was either he's going to the basket or it's nothing. But Fox already has that.
That's super. Yeah, I think that's super impressive. And I love Fox. I've been on the other side of it where I'm sure that I think he's almost guaranteed to be good. There's part of me that still like wants to like him more than Lonzo.
Excuse me. Sorry. I think I need to break this news right now. Important. Big Woj bomb.
Wow.
Timothy Mozgov and D'Angelo Russell are going to the Nets for Brook Lopez and the 27th pick of the draft, all but confirming Lonzo Ball will be going number two to the Lakers. And my day just got a lot better, guys. I think that's what we need to start with on that one.
Whoa.
Okay.
So the Nets are willing to take on some salary in order to get back a really talented young player that they haven't really had before in D'Angelo Russell. And the Lakers, Brook Lopez is going to be their best player right off the bat. And it doesn't hurt their cap space too much. So their moves for maybe a Paul George or something might be sooner than we might think. But wow, this is a bomb for sure. And I knew something was going to happen during this show. I just didn't think it would be that.
I really, really like this deal. I don't even like D'Angelo that much. But for the Nets, this is the kind of cap space that you want to take in and allow these young players to develop. You can let Mozgov play as much as he could. But, you know, he's on the hook for another 3 years. Or 2 years after the upcoming season, but they really shouldn't be taking on any other contracts right now anyway. So this is a good way to fill a hole, and D'Angelo Russell has potential. I mean, I don't want to knock him before he even gets to the city.
for all his faults, he's a pretty dynamic player, and he could have tons of success in Brooklyn. I actually like this trade for LA. They're too big of an organization and too big of a franchise to lose, to only be winning 20 games a year. And Brook Lopez is going to help them at least get some wins and get some momentum for the future.
Yeah, I was listening to Colin Cowherd today, actually, and he's like, the league is just better when the Lakers are good. Even if you might hate them, it's just kind of a fact of life. And the other thing about this is the Lakers are just about guaranteed to drop out of the top five, which means the 76ers are going to get that 2019 pick for the Kings, which probably most people haven't thought that far ahead, and I don't know why I did. But wow.
Another thing is that Brook's only – this is the last year of this contract. So, again, they're clearing space for 2018 to make a run at everyone.
LeBron.
Including LeBron, yeah. So that's – wow. What a trade, and what a time that they make that trade.
And that was one of the big things with drafting Ball, is that you have D'Angelo Russell, you have Jordan Clarkson, you have guys in place to play the point guard. So drafting Ball kind of makes a logjam, so I guess it's inevitable now.
Yeah, so the Lakers probably start next year Ball. Well, Ball, or maybe Darren Fox somehow goes number two, but Ball, Jordan Clarkson, Brandon Ingram, Julius Randle, and Brook Lopez, which, I mean, they're not going to be a playoff team, but it'll be an interesting team for sure, and it just further clears that cap space for 2018, which is probably the biggest part of this deal for sure. And just to have Brook Lopez ready in case you aren't able to hit on the free agents you want, he's a nice little backup option for sure. But do we back to the mock draft, or you guys have some final thoughts on that?
Let's get back to it. I got to refocus and
yeah, we're good way to keep track though, Dante. I'm
got an eye on it.
So we were at pick number five, De'Aaron Fox. So let's go to six and the Orlando Magic.
So with this pick, if I was them, I would take Jonathan Isaac, which is pretty standard for most people. He's a great shooter. People compare him to Kevin Durant. I don't really see that. He doesn't quite have the ball skills that Durant had. They like him just because, or he gets that comparison just because of his frame and his jump shot. He has some upside defensively, got length, and he's a guy, he can be an impact player right away for that team.
This just makes me sad because that means Isaac won't be on the Timberwolves, and that's all I want is the Wiggins, Isaac, Towns threesome, and LaVine. So, but yeah, I think the Magic, they're just not good at rebuilding. So you just take whatever you can get. And I think Isaac, he's perfect for this version of the NBA. People have talked about him as a small ball five since he's so long. If he can bulk up a little bit, he'll never be a really husky guy, but I think he'll have enough useful strength to be able to man that role in certain lineups and stuff. So I think he's a really interesting prospect and one that I'm very fond of.
I wonder what this means for Aaron Gordon though. I generally agree that Isaac he's probably the best player available at this point, unless maybe you're thinking that Malik Monk can be the lights out scorer that some believe he can be. But where does he fall in line with Gordon and their plans for him, considering that they have so much money shelled out to Biombo and some money to Vucevic for the next couple of years?
Well, I think this just goes back to the league is trending towards positionless basketball. Yep. And when you look at Gordon and you look at Isaac, you can play them together no problem. Isaac has the speed to guard some small forwards. He's kind of a tweener because of his slight frame. But I think him and Gordon would actually be a really interesting combination. We saw Gordon have a lot more success when he moved over to that power forward position, posting up, using his quickness. So they could continue doing that and then just create cross matchups.
That's a very good point. And I think that they're thinking about this pick more in the future than like the next 2 years when Vucevic and Biombo are still around, because I think they'll just play around with it and just continue to build piece by piece and hopefully get back to some playoff basketball. So number seven, the Minnesota Timberwolves. I think this becomes a very interesting pick all of a sudden.
So you said that you want to see Isaac on the Timberwolves. I want to see Lauri Markkanen on the Timberwolves. So that's who I would personally pick. He's such a polarizing player right now. I personally love him. I feel like I'm one of the few people that are really high on this guy. Into mid-January, he was shooting almost 50% from three. He ended the year over 42%. People are comparing him to Dirk. He's not Dirk. And for some reason, every big white guy from Europe gets compared to Dirk. What he does have is an advanced offensive skill set. He's a legit 7 feet. At Arizona, they even utilized him as a ball handler in the pick and roll with a 4-5 pick and roll, which I found very impressive. He's not an elite passer, but he makes the right play. He makes simple passes. And when you look at a guy like that, how he can go left, right, he has touch. He has more touch than pretty much any big man around the rim. It's just his athleticism holding him back a little bit. And he's not a terrible athlete. I think he'll be a very good player. And he's such a good shooter. I think he's a better shooter than Isaac. So having him on the Timberwolves with Kat and Wiggins posting up, kicking out to him, I think that's a perfect fit for them.
He's pretty polarizing in just my mind in general, because I can see that point where you're saying, but I can also see him just being white Channing Frye, which obviously isn't worth that high of a pick. But playing him next to Towns, I guess he does guard some of his efficiencies. He's a pretty good offensive rebounder. I would obviously like to see him be able to protect the rim better, because that gives you more options with him as a player. The offensive skill is, you can't deny it, but that defensive side of the ball just really scares me. So I guess I do like him next to the Timberwolves, but overall I think he's probably closer to the 12th best prospect in my mind rather than the 7th.
Wow, I don't know if I'd rank him as low as 12, but I think considering the news today that Pekovic was waived, this kind of puts in motion.
That happened
today. Twitter's a beautiful thing. With that news seeming kind of pushing along this trajectory that the T-Wolves and Tibbs might want to have, and with the recent rumors of them being interested in Butler and Iguodala, it seems like they want to compete now, and I think this guy could immediately make an impact with his shooting. So given all the defensive concerns, I still think that on the offensive side of the ball, it just outweighs it. And who else would you draft at this spot? I don't really know if they have that many options as far as what their team needs.
I mean, that's a good point. They got their quote unquote point guard of the future last year in Chris Dunn. They still have Rubio, so they don't really need a guard, which are two of the next best players in Dennis Smith and Nick Attilian. I can see it. It just doesn't get me very excited. That's why I want Isaac to go 7th, because it just has the rest of the draft fall into place a little bit better in my eyes. But now we're on to number 8 and the New York Knickerbockers.
So with this pick, I think it's going to be a toss-up between two players. Malik Monk and Ntilikina. I probably butchered that.
I don't think I've heard anyone say his name either, which kind of doesn't help.
I thought we agreed at some point that we were going to call this guy Frank.
Okay.
That's
Frank.
Well, yeah, we haven't talked in a while, so yeah.
We got to write that. That's got to be one of the disclaimers at the beginning of the show.
So I think it's going to be Monk. Just because the Knicks, similar to the Lakers, where they're going to draft ball so they can bring in some seats. Monk will sell tickets a lot more than Frank will. He is a very good scorer. He's a tremendous shooter. I worry about his overall upside. As we discussed this on a previous podcast about his height and his size, he's not a very big guy. And so I do worry about his overall upside, but I think the Knicks are going to take him. He's a very talented young guy. He needs to learn how to play some point guard and some on ball.
I'm I can't kind of express my Malik Monk love enough. I think this guy's just going to come in the league and be able to score really well. I think he's got the tools to be able to develop a pretty good handle, which allows him to work out of the pick and roll, which will be very important. And if he's able to actually like become at least a competent ball handler and maybe even play some point, I think the sky's the limit for this guy. I know there's other things in the NBA other than scoring the ball, but I think he's going to be close to a lead at it within the first 3 or 4 years he's in the league. So I love this pick, and I think he'll fit right in those bright lights in MSG.
Yeah, I think it kind of goes with just the Knicks culture, the Monk pick. I don't know if there maybe Frank maybe makes more sense in Phil's eyes, but I've also heard Kennard being tossed around with this pick. I've heard he loves.
You got to trade back if you're going to get him.
He loves Markkanen, apparently. So I think that's where the start of those Kristaps rumors began. It's Phil has this infatuation with tall white dudes. So you know, I do think that they go Monk here. It won't be as surprising, and a lot of it probably has to do with what's going to go on in number 9, and I'm interested to hear your thoughts on that because I have my own.
So, number 9, the general consensus by most people is Smith Jr. I am leaning more towards Frank.
Mm-hmm.
Smith Jr.'s had a number of knee problems. And so it's not that I don't like his game. I think he's a very, very good player. He's an explosive athlete. He can shoot. He's a pretty all-around point guard. I'd just be wary that he becomes the next Derrick Rose where he's just always injured. He seems injury-prone. And Frank, he struggles to shoot a little bit. There's some question marks about his shot. But similar to Fox, he has good form, and it's strange that he misses as much as he does. He's probably the best perimeter defender in this draft. The one reason why he might not get picked there is that he has not worked out for an NBA team because his professional team in France is playing for the championship.
But he was, I think they had a picture of him with some Dallas personnel.
Dallas might have just flown over there and met with him.
And there's
if that
also
happened, then it was today or yesterday.
And then there's
because
something.
As of a couple of days ago, I know that he was not going to work out for anybody.
I did see though that Dallas, I don't know, it was some notification or tweet, but I saw that Dallas and more importantly Carlisle, who's very particular about his point guards, they really like Frank. So
and they hired someone that coached him.
His coach out overseas is going to be the summer league coach for them.
So
Mets.
I think that's what's really pushing me towards Frank here. I think it's. I think it's somewhat of a Cuban style pick insofar as this really niche investment that he thinks will play off, and he thinks he's playing the market better than everyone else. and I think overall I think it fits too.
I think an under the radar piece of this is if the Knicks like Frank, if Cuban feels the need to move up even just a spot or two, in kind of an NFL-ian like move. And get the guy that they want. I could see that happening, and that's.
I thought this as well. I just don't know how much they really love Frank in New York, and I don't really know where that trade's going to come from, because unfortunately, like the Mavericks themselves, a lot of these teams have to be in the spot that they're in to get their guy, right? Like if you trade back from 6, if you're the Magic, you're not getting Jonathan Isaac. And same goes for Minnesota, who might really want Markkanen.
It's fair. So number 10, the Sacramento Kings. The last of the top 10 prospects in my eyes that's left is Dennis Smith, and he probably won't work next to De'Aaron Fox. So this is an intriguing pick now, because after 10 through 14, there's a bunch of names that you can throw in there.
So when I was doing this, I immediately just put down Dennis Smith Jr., and then I remembered that it was Sacramento once again. So I'm going to go with Zach Collins out of Gonzaga. I really like his game. He's a really tough player, very physical, even though he's not the biggest guy, and he's shown a ton of skill on the offensive end. I think he fits quite well in Sacramento.
Collins is an interesting player to me as well, and I think that this is right around the range 10 through 12 that I think I could really see him going. And yeah, I'm a big fan of him. It's weird that he didn't really start at all at Gonzaga and played somewhat sparingly, but I think he's going to be a quality player. I don't know how much I love his upside, but he's going to be a solid player.
I think this also matches the timelines of their other centers. I mean, they have three on the roster, but just kind of considering where they are in their development process and where he is, he probably needs a couple of years to grow. And having Cauley-Stein and Scal and Papagiannis there could be helpful for this guy. As I mean, they hope to develop some type of a winning culture in Sacramento.
Okay, just kidding. I forgot about all those centers. I don't like the pick anymore.
I still think it works. Pick.
I just don't think you can take centers in four straight drafts after you have Boogie, after you have had
But
Boogie.
None of them are like Boogie. You know, none of these guys are clear top good, talents. Yeah. Instead, what you're doing is kind of letting a guy probably put him in the G League, let him have some shine there, let him work as much as possible, and put him on a two-way contract where he can sit in on NBA games and things like that. This team's not going to be good, right? Like,
yeah,
I don't know. To me, you might as well take what could be the best talent available. I just don't know what sense it makes to take Kennard at this spot, or if he's still available, take Frank, because they fill really clear roles on a team. And I just don't know if that this team needs anything in particular except just talent.
My problem with that is they traded for Buddy Hield, so you get Kennard.
Yeah, and then, yeah, I get, there's not, I mean, unless you, yeah, because Donovan Mitchell plays that position, like, they need a forward, and this, there's not many forwards here unless you really like Ananobi, which I hope we'll get to at some point in your mock. But yeah, I agree. I think for me, this is, I would trade down if I were Sacramento, if this is how the draft falls.
Trade down and take Justin Jackson?
Sure, why not? Well, we appreciate Thomas joining the show. He had to bolt out a little quick there because he had another gathering to get to, but we appreciate his time.
Is that what this is? Is this we'll a probably... gathering?
I don't, what do you want to call it?
I guess we're on a hangout anyway, right? So
yeah,
we'll call it a hangout.
It's a hangout, bruh. I'm pretty sure that's the first bruh reference, yeah. And hopefully the last, yeah, that we'll have on this show. But we're going to wrap up with that top 10 mock. If you want more NBA draft content, go to lastwordonprobasketball.com, where we have profiles of like 60 players and a lot of quality hashtag content on there. But we're gonna play a little game now called Should I Stay or Should I Go Now, featuring some NBA trade targets.
Should I stay or should I go now? Should I stay or should I go now? If I go, there will be trouble. And if I stay, it will be double. So come on and let me know.
We'll begin with Paul George. I think his name, he started kind of this whole whirlwind. Whether the Lakers trade for him after the trade that you just heard discussed early on the podcast, bringing in, well, first of all, do you think it becomes more or less likely that the Lakers try and go after George?
I think they hurt themselves if they go after George right now. I think as much as Paul George has said he wants to go to the Lakers, you know that going into next free agency. So if he really, really does want to go, and again, they don't have any control of him right now. So as of now, he's never played for the Lakers, and he possibly never will. I don't think it makes any sense to hurt your future by giving away X, Y, and Z for Paul George when he could likely end up there anyway. What this trade did show me is that they are willing to open up their cap space for next summer and really build a team around these young guys. So I don't know if it'll be the Lakers. I have a feeling it'll end up not being them. But I do think that he will be finding his way out of Indiana soon enough.
So who are the other teams that you think we should keep an eye on? The Cavs, obviously.
I think Cleveland's in play. I think
Boston.
I think Boston's still in play. No, I don't really know if there could be a dark horse? Off the top of my head, another rental team that in 1 year thinks they can get over the top. Though in my mind, I still see the possibility of him wanting to go to the Clippers as at least non-zero. He is a Clippers fan from his time growing up there. In my mind, he makes more sense on the wing, and I've said this for so long. They need a wing guy. They need to get rid of Blake Griffin, and this is their chance to do both of those things in one trade.
Yeah, and he's just the souped-up version of Carmelo Anthony at this point in his career, so I could certainly see that being the case. So I say he ends up staying for the year. You say he leaves?
I'm gonna say he's gonna go. I think someone will pull the trigger. I don't know who will, but I think that he's had enough. Larry Bird has stepped down and is now only in that consultant role, and I think it's in their best interest to get whatever they can for him right now.
Next up, we have Jimmy Butler. His name just kind of got thrown into things over this last 36 hours or so. Brought up as another potential trade target for the Cavs. The Suns have even been mentioned as either a third party or even a destination, since Butler does have an extra year on that contract not running out until 18-19. So he will fetch more. I think another part of this is that Dwayne Wade did opt to stay into his contract for this year. He opted into his $24 million player option, which I think certainly plays a factor. So what do you see with Butler?
I think Butler's going to be really upset. I think the asking price is so, so high for him. And a lot of the teams that they've started talking to may not really even have the assets. I don't really like the idea of Minnesota giving up Levine for Butler, and I don't maybe in Phoenix that could be a good place for him, just fit wise. Going to Boston doesn't really make sense to me. I think that he and Isaiah will run into their own issues. I think they're both pretty ball dominant players, and we just saw that season run its course in Chicago. So. I think he's likely to stay, though if it is anywhere, and I do advise against it, I do think it's going to be Boston just because of the type of assets that they have.
I think that it's important to remember. I was talking to a friend yesterday who's a Cavs fan and stuff, and I was like, who would you rather have, George or Butler? And he said Butler, but I think people who don't watch his game super closely don't realize how ball dominant he really is. People just think of him as your basic 3-and-D guy in kind of a very roundabout way. But he kind of needs the ball in his hands. He's not that great on the spot up. So I just think that he fits better in a system where he can have the ball more, which I do agree with. Like, the Suns would be good. The Timberwolves, I think, aren't still an interesting spot for him, which they will always be with the Tibbs connection. But if you're a team like Boston or Cleveland, I think you'd rather have Paul George just because he's easier to fit into a system. And I think he's a better defender, right, than Butler? I would say so.
Yeah,
he's taller.
I'd agree. And I think I'm not sure how Butler's done as far as like the all NBA defensive teams. But Paul George has certainly been there when he's healthy. He always makes an impact. And I do agree he's easier to transition into any team.
And he'll be better as a defender on a team where he doesn't have to do so much offensively like he did with Indiana this past season.
Yeah.
The next wing we bring up is Gordon Hayward. Seems to be a three-man race in my eyes, I think, with two very obvious front runners and then the third kind of lurking. And that's him returning to Utah, getting a little bit more money, him going to Boston with his former coach, Brad Stevens, who quote-unquote believed in him before no one else did. And the third team that I think has to be mentioned in this conversation, maybe you don't agree so much, is the Miami Heat and Pat Riley. They just have a way with doing these things. And over the second half of that last season, they were 30-11, one of the better teams in the Eastern Conference. And you pick up Hayward to go along with Dragic and Whiteside and skinny James Johnson, and I think they suddenly become a really interesting team. So where do you see Hayward fitting in?
I like the idea that he could maybe go to Miami. And if Miami is so great and they can bring back James Johnson, they can bring back Waiters. Justice Winslow didn't really play at all last year. That certainly is an interesting team, and one that I think could compete for the top half of the East with Gordon Hayward on the team. I do think it's going to come down to where his loyalty lies. Brad Stevens, over and over again, as you just mentioned, and has been so well covered, has a really great relationship with Hayward. So I do see that possibly and likely being the most appealing factor for him. And I just, I don't know. There's something about, I guess, getting beat by the Warriors so badly 4 games in a row that might make you want to go to the East a little bit more, right?
And the George Hill, if George Hill decides to leave, obviously that's a major game changer as well. But yeah, like you said, how good can Utah really be? Maybe they get to the third seed a couple seasons, but they don't have an obvious way to get better. They're pretty much tied up. They're going to have to start paying their young players. Having Gobert as the second best player on a championship team doesn't seem super likely. So I would say I see him leaving and to Boston.
Yep.
Next up we'll go with the last forward of the group, Paul Millsap. I'll let you start, cause I don't know what teams have really been highly coveting him, in terms of leaving Atlanta.
Yeah, I think the issue for Millsap is I do think he's going to get paid, and I'm actually myself not too certain about, where he's been linked to exactly, but I could imagine, a few different places where he fits in. I think that Dallas could create the cap room for him to be there. I think you have to still connect Miami to him as a possible destination. And you know, I'm sure there'll be another couple suitors that are interested in his services. And we've talked about it before. He's the most underrated star in this league. I just don't know if it makes any sense for Atlanta to pay him. And for that to make any sense, it comes back to the idea that you're either really good or you're really bad in the NBA, and you don't want to be in between. And right now Atlanta's at that kind of point where, you know, they won't really be getting any better. They're not exactly the greatest free agent destination, and they certainly won't be really scratching at LeBron's heels anytime soon. So why not try to start over? Why not turn Paul Millsap maybe in a sign and trade into draft picks? And I'm just not sure that that it's smart on Atlanta's side for him to stay.
That's a good point. And they do have some new ownership with a little bit of shifting that front office. So I think the Millsap free agency is going to be really interesting. And it kind of reminds me of the LaMarcus Aldridge free agency, where teams like Phoenix, teams like Denver are going to get in the mix. He visited Orlando 2 years ago before he signed this most recent deal with Atlanta. So he's still really good. It's just tough to pay him 5 years, 25, 30 million a year. Especially as he gets older and he still uses a decent amount of athleticism in his game. The final guy in this silly game that I made up, Chris Paul. There's been so many names thrown out. Clippers, Spurs. He's going to visit the Rockets, apparently, which is something. The Nuggets are apparently going to get a visit. So how do we see Chris Paul's free agency kind of playing out?
I think that it makes the most sense for him to just return, given the fact, and we'll expand on this in a little bit, but the fact that Pau Gasol opted out, they're going to restructure his deal. That's a really great move for them, because that does allow them to have the space to offer Chris Paul something. For him to go to the Rockets, you have to know you're stripping them away of all their assets. And you're also putting the possible MVP out of position, because he became an MVP candidate when he became a point guard. There are no two ways around that. So to put him back into a shooting guard role maybe minimizes how much he can do. Obviously, we know what his abilities have been in the past from that position, but he really looked his best when he was the one, and I just don't think that fit makes any sense.
I absolutely agree with that. I think that that's just silliness, and they would be such a different team, and I just couldn't even see them playing together effectively.
I just think you're losing Lou Williams. You're going to lose Ryan Anderson. You'll maybe lose Eric Gordon, if not Lou Williams. So
all the pieces that made them the number three seed in this year's
exactly.
playoffs. The Spurs, on the other hand, I think there is a legitimate shot of this. They do have to make cap room. Older guys like your Manu Ginobili's, your Tony Parker's might have to see their way out the door in order for this deal to come to fruition. Because at first people talked about Chris Paul signing for the mid-level extension, but I just can't see that happening. He's too prideful of a guy. He's worked too hard. He's the reason that this rule in the CBA got changed from over 36 to over 38 so that he could make sure he gets paid. So I think he's going to
I think that's a great regardless. That's a great part of it, isn't it?
Yeah,
he's very low-key.
He gave the money to himself over the middle guys and the lower tier guys. So I think you'd be silly to think that he isn't going to go anywhere for the max. So I do think that the Spurs, though, are a legitimate shot and the only one outside of the Clippers. But ultimately, I think he likes LA, and I think he'll just take the money and just run it back with that same sad group that we love talking about so much.
So,
well, we should talk about the Pau Gasol. Well, I guess we kind of already covered it. I think he's opting out of his $16 million player option. I think he'll come back to the Spurs, maybe get another year on that, maybe more overall money. And they'll wait to sign him probably, after they see what happens with Chris Paul. They also have Patty Mills as a free agent, which will be interesting. We already talked about Dwayne Wade opting in, which is a big deal for them. After he talked about maybe leaving. And then the other name that I just wanted to quickly mention, we don't really have to talk about, is Milos Teodosic, voted on by the NBA GMs as the best player in the world outside of the NBA, is looking to come over next season. And the Bulls are the reported front runners, to give them stability at the point guard position.
That's great. I think that Teodosic is, awesome.
We talked about him last year during the Olympics.
Yeah, I mean he's an incredible player. I think he's certainly going to make an impact on any team. And I'd actually really like to see the Nets make a run at him, if only because
they have D'Angelo now.
Come trade deadline, you're right. But come trade deadline, I think he's going to be a very popular asset and one that will make an impact on a playoff team. So yeah, I guess it doesn't make as much sense now given this news with D'Angelo Russell. But if you're a bad team in this league, I think this is a guy that you take a chance on. You give him a pretty nice contract, and if he turns out to be a star and you're not ready to be there just yet, he could turn into a really good trade piece.
That's fair. Well, I think that's just gonna wrap up this podcast. You and I were talking before the show, and I think we're nearing year two of the podcast, so we're excited for what's to come with the draft happening on Thursday and free agency coming up, and then the long, long off season. So it should be a fun time.
A great off season it is. I think it can't be talked about enough that this is really a full year league now, and that comes with a lot of fun.
Yeah, today alone was one of the most fun days in the NBA, and there hasn't been an NBA game for, 10 days or so? So yeah. It's a lot of fun. I think we'll have a show out draft night. I think we'll have a show out this weekend, so keep your ears peeled for that one. I'll be recording with some of my idiot friends, but it'll be fun. And then Dante, you and I will reconvene hopefully next week as we get back into the swing of things and don't wait 20 days to record a show.
Absolutely.
You can follow the show on Twitter at Coast to Coast Pod, the number two, not the word. For him, Dante Granieri, for me, Austin Craycraft, we will talk to you guys later.